You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for listening, for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. We're going to talk a little bit about Pat Riley laying out his rebuilding plan and take some inventory on Miami's playoff chances and lottery odds. But we're here recapping the Heat's big win over the Warriors here on Wednesday night. Miami got out to a 64-40 lead in the first half, then fell behind late, and then won it 126-125 thanks to a Dwayne Wade three-pointer as time expired. With Miami down two with seconds remaining, Wade calmly brought the ball up, fumbled it a bit late, then got it back and hit an unbelievable bank shot at the buzzer to beat the Warriors and snap a six-game home losing streak.
Waiters back to Dwayne. Shoots. No, he couldn't get it off. Now fires it up.
Wade finished with 25 points on 10 of 16 shooting, including 5 of 8 from three-point range, in what will go down as yet another legendary moment for the greatest player in franchise history. Unbelievable shot, great moment, a big win for a Heat team that was looking desperately for a win like this, David.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's a special moment because, obviously, I don't even think it matters that they won. I don't even think the win matters in context of the season, given what's happened lately and the Heat's losing at home, the Heat's recent losses to the Suns and the Pistons, and the fact that a playoff berth is probably slipping away. It's all about celebrating Dwayne Wade, continuing to celebrate him for whatever's left of the season, whether it includes the playoffs or not. And then to have him have this iconic moment here, it's unbelievable. It fills us with, and we were talking about this before, so many conflicting emotions because, again, do you tank? Do you want to tank? Do you root for a loss? Do you hope that, the team just finds a way to lose in the next few games? And then he does something like this and it kind of changes everything. You're not sure quite how to feel. Like, I feel right now like, I mean, I want to celebrate this moment. I am giddy about it, but at the same time I'm conflicted. But at any point, it's incredible that it worked out this way. It was nice to see that. It was nice for the fans at home at American Airlines Arena to be able to see this. Just incredible. I'm kind of like speechless here because I didn't expect this to happen. Again, the game is
nobody
described.
Did.
Yeah, I know. I mean, as you described it, look, they had this huge lead, and then Golden State being pretty damn good, they were able to come back, retake the lead, and you're kind of thinking, oh, well, it's not unexpected for the Heat to let a game slip away as they did against the Phoenix Suns. And then for Wade to have this incredible moment. And let's not forget, he hit a three-pointer just seconds before that just to even put Miami in this, just to have this opportunity. And if not for a missed free throw from Kevin Durant, and earlier in the game, a missed free throw from Steph Curry. I mean, it's unbelievable that all these different things worked out the way they did, but it was absolutely perfect.
I mentioned Wade finished with 25 points. Shout out to Goran Dragic.
Oh, yeah.
27 points in the game, had 20 points in that second quarter that basically opened up that 24-point lead. Big game from Josh Richardson as well, 21 points on 14 shots. He was 5-7 from three-point range. He couldn't miss. It seemed like in the second half, Bam Adebayo got the start in place of Hassan Whiteside, which he had a nice game, 11 points, 10 rebounds, wasn't going up against DeMarcus Cousins, who stayed out for rest because the Warriors are playing the back-to-back in Orlando. He'll be there tomorrow night. Justice Winslow had a nice game, too. He had 12 points, 6 rebounds, and 5 assists. We mentioned the conflicting emotions, David.
Yeah.
I feel like I am doubly conflicted here.
Yeah.
I could have been there. And just for and I'm like, I'm cheering as Dwayne Wade is hitting that buzzer beater. I leap up out of my chair here. I'm watching it here at my house, in the Bay Area. But I had yesterday just gotten on a plane and left Fort Lauderdale to come back here. I had credentials for the game. I was ready to. I could have been at the game, but I decided, you know what? I don't want to, you know, spend all that time down there. I wanted to get back here after 4 days in Florida. I had the two games. I'm working on a piece. I got all the information I needed. So I flew back here thinking like, yeah, it'd be nice to watch the Heat play the Warriors, but I could see the Warriors here anytime I want. I've just seen the Heat a bunch of times. They're going to lose because the Warriors are the best team in the league, and they just got done losing to the worst team in the league. So what's the point? This was the point. I could have been there. I could have seen this, David. This was Wade's last great moment. I don't even know how to feel right now. Like, I'm at once elated and excited for this win, and I'm also just like, damn, I should have been there. I should have been there celebrating, you know?
It would have worked out differently if you had actually attended somehow. I'm not sure how, but the fates would have against you. Yeah, I mean, they would have rimmed out or something. You would have burped at just the right moment, and the ball would have fallen out. I don't know, something, a butterfly effect that would have changed the outcome of the game.
I would have said something dumb to Dwayne Wade before the game, like, yeah, you know, good luck if you're in a situation for a game winning shot. You know, maybe the bank will be open, and then he just, I don't know. Going back to sort of what this means in the context of the season, I am sort of ready to just say the rest of the regular season doesn't matter. In the way that, like, they could just... Look, I don't know if it's just the high of this moment, but, like, let's think about this. The playoffs, even by winning this game, the playoffs have basically slipped out of their hand. Like, it is... I think 538 has less than a 20% chance of making the playoffs. Like, it's almost impossible for them to do it at this point. That said, having a moment like this on Dwayne Wade's final season, with him being able to just leap up, you know, and do his thing in front of the stands, like, they're going to make another court culture t-shirt out of this. I guarantee it. I'll buy one. Having this moment there, it kind of just... It sheds all responsibility for the Heat to do anything else for this season. Like, they can lose every game from here on out. I would be fine with that because we got this. We got this one last... This was Dwayne Wade's version of Kobe shooting, like, 50 shots and scoring 60 points in his last game. This was Wade's version of that. If Kobe had made a career of just being a volume shooter and being the greatest to ever do that... This was how Wade did things. This was Wade, once again, just having complete control with 15 seconds left in a game and just hitting some ridiculous circus shot. This was what made Dwayne Wade great his entire career. This is what made the finish of this game great. And this was, I think, his sign-off.
Yeah, it definitely does get that feeling. I mean, look, we saw moments like this even last year when he had, you know, a small sample size with his team. He had some pretty big games there, and we were excited about those. He even managed to muster a pretty solid performance during the playoffs as well against the Philadelphia 76ers. So there's probably more left, but I think nothing will top this. And that's okay. I think that for those fans in attendance, they got to see a really, really great outing from one of the best players in NBA history and certainly in franchise history. And look, realistically, I know we'll talk about this more later on, the playoffs are still an option. Again, even whether it matters or not, though, that's a whole discussion for another time. Still, it's just kind of hard to get over the emotions of seeing him hit that shot, an almost impossible shot. One-legged fadeaway, the ball kind of bobbling out of his hands just seconds before. I mean, so much had to work out for him just to knock down that shot. How about... And I think we got a question about this, right? About Deion passing up the opportunity? Because I thought I thought Waiters was totally going to take that shot. I mean, he was double-teamed, and I was like, well, so what does that matter to Deion?
As Dylan Smith writes in, that shot makes this season worth it no matter how it ends. We'll take your Twitter questions after this break. Let's go to Twitter to answer some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Mo writes in, what was more amazing on the final play? Deion passing or Wade's shot? As you mentioned, Deion passing it, like, everybody in the arena knew Deion Waiters was taking that shot, except apparently Deion Waiters. Like, how was that? How did Deion not take that shot? He already hit that shot against the Warriors to beat them two seasons ago. It would have made so much sense, and it would have been a terrible shot, don't get me wrong. Like, he should not have taken the shot, which means that's exactly the shot Deion takes. But he passed it to Dwayne Wade. I mean, look, Deion took that shot against the Warriors. Dwayne Wade was in Chicago, right? That, to me, speaks of just this the way players still respect Dwayne Wade, the deferential treatment to Dwayne Wade, just saying, like, Dion's like, I know I can make this shot 10 times out of 10, but I'm giving it to you, Dwayne.
Well, think about where Wade took the shot at the top of the key. That was where Dion took that game winner against Golden State that you mentioned from a couple seasons ago. So that's where Dion would normally have been. He would have had the ball in his hands. He would have been the one to take that shot. But Dwayne, if you look at the play itself unfold, he brings the ball up court, as you mentioned before. And then it looks like he's going to try to go for the easy two just to tie the game and possibly push it into overtime. And then some good defense, I want to say, by Iguodala on the segment, kind of pulls back out. Then that's when he bobbles it, passes it to Dion, gets it back, bobbles it, and then takes that shot. You could see Dion throw his hands up as Dion was struggling. I'm sorry, you could see Dwayne throw his hands up as Dion was struggling with what to do with the ball in his hands, because he did not have a clear look at the basket. And to his credit, he did defer to Dwayne Wade. So I'm a little surprised to see it, but not all that surprised knowing the kind of impact that Wade has on younger players. And to Wade's credit, he was able to knock it down. So I think, to answer Mo, I think Wade's shot is still more amazing. Yeah. But you have to give Dion some credit for that, because, I mean, he's not resistant to taking contested shots, and he still made the right decision.
Shout out to Stan Van Gundy. Recently, he said on ESPN, I think it was on Dan Lebatard's show, that given the choice of any player in NBA history, who he would want to put the ball, like, whose hands he would want to put the ball in a situation just like this, the final seconds, you need one shot, who do you want the ball to go to? He said Dwayne Wade, not Michael Jordan, not Kobe, nobody else. He said Dwayne Wade. And the reason he said that was because nobody in his experience, and of course, and he admitted to this, he had coached Dwayne Wade, so he saw it up close and personal. Right. Nobody in his experience just controlled the game and was as calm in those final seconds as Dwayne Wade was. Nobody made consistently the right decision over and over again like Dwayne Wade did in those final seconds. He just knew how to use every single ounce of that shot clock, every bit of it, to make sure that not only did he get a good shot, but the opponent didn't get a shot at all. And that's exactly what happened. All right, let's go to this next question from Kyle. If the Heat are serious about making the playoffs, should they start Bam finally? It sucks for Whiteside, who's played much better this season, but the team played way better from the start tonight. David, it's pretty interesting, and I think everybody's eyes were kind of looking at this. What does that Bam, Adebayo, and Kelly Olynyk front court look like as a starting unit against the Warriors front court that, even without Boogie, is still pretty good? You've got Draymond, Kevin Durant, Kevin Looney, all kind of in those forward positions there. I thought they looked really good. I thought that Olynyk had another good night like he did against Phoenix. Bam was just a ton of energy, super energized on both ends, was defensively huge because he was able to switch onto guys like Durant and Steph. He had a couple of moments there where he was just like, put the clamps on Durant, put the clamps on Steph at some point. I thought he looked great.
He did. I just don't know that they're going to start Bam. I think part of the problem, I think, is you saw, look, Udonis Haslem get some minutes tonight, which is, again, another phenomenal storyline that's going to get obscured here. But, it was great to see UD get some quality playing time there. And I think they're just too thin there. So I think Spoelstra in particular would prefer having Whiteside available and then to have the additional resource of Bam off the bench because of moments like tonight where he can guard so many different positions and he has that option. And I think that's why Bam's been playing fourth quarters and Whiteside has been sitting during those occasions. So to me, I think it'll probably remain the same way as normally with Whiteside starting and Bam coming off the bench and providing some, you know, versatile defense and things of that sort. So, I think to Kyle's point, Whiteside has been playing better and we've acknowledged that on a number of occasions. It's a conflict for Spoelstra, but he's had several over the course of the season to decide who to start, who to play. And it hasn't been an easy answer for him. I think Whiteside's still the best option. Do you disagree? Because to me, I think Whiteside still provides something different than what Bam can do. And it's still good to have Bam be able to come off the bench. You don't want to use him up for 30-something minutes, although I think Adebayo can certainly handle the workload.
Yeah, and he proved to be able to handle the workload tonight. I mean, he's a guy that's playing 20 to 25 minutes. He played 32 minutes tonight. Udonis Haslem got 6 minutes between the third and the fourth quarter to give Bam and Olynyk a little bit of a break during that time, because it was during the same time that Durant and Curry were on the bench for the Warriors, and all those guys kind of came back into the game together for the Warriors and the Heat. And so Haslem, with his 6 minutes, I thought that was really big, because, again, having Bam and Olynyk fresh at the end of the game was huge. I don't disagree with you. I do think that Whiteside's going to keep starting. I just, look, nothing's going to change. Nothing's like the only tweak I could see at this point is maybe Dragic going in for Waiters. But even that, I'm not even positive that's going to happen. It might. I just, that's, as far as like a drastic change, Whiteside going to the bench for Bam, that would be drastic after Whiteside has essentially started the entire season when he's been available. So I just don't see that happening right now. I do think that that could be something the Heat look to finagle this summer, because at the end of the day, Olynyk, Bam, and Whiteside are all centers, even though Olynyk has been playing a lot of four. But when Whiteside was out, Olynyk played a lot of the five tonight against the Warriors, and he looks so much better when he's just in pick and pop situations and not having to be out on the floor more on the perimeter like he does when he's a power forward. So I do think that that's something they'll address over the summer, maybe trying to trade Hassan Whiteside, who will then be on an expiring contract going into next season. So maybe something there, because Bam, I think, and he's proven this now, is capable and ought to be starting at this point for the Heat. He's more than ready to do it, and he gives them he can make them potentially a dominant defense in a way that I don't think Whiteside can at this point, because he's getting older, he's 29, and I just, what Bam is able to provide as far as switchability and versatility, that is so much more valuable than just the raw rim protection that Whiteside has, and the declining athleticism that right now is going to come with him. Okay, Pat Riley pretty much laid out his plan to rebuild the team. We'll talk about that after this break. Pat Riley sat down for an interview with Jason Jackson, and it basically outlined his whole plan to rebuild the team.
People think I don't believe in draft picks. You know, they're so wrong. You know, I will cobble up as many draft picks as I can. I'll keep them in a corner. I'll try to buy second-round picks. I'll do whatever I can until I know that those draft choices, either they will develop into star players or into very, very good players, or I can take some assets and some young players and turn them into Alonzo Mourning, turn them into Shaquille O'Neal.
Riley will try to add a player this summer, look to possibly make a trade for his next Alonzo Mourning, as he just said, and in 2020 aim to create not one but two max cap slots and attract two stars to Miami. He laid it all out, and if we look at the free agency class of 2020, we know it's not stacked, right? But one name stands out, David, and that's Anthony Davis.
Wow. Look, I think there's a lot to break down there as far as Davis is being the top option. One, I think there's certainly a conflict because of clutch sports. I mean, let's assume that a trade doesn't go down with the Celtics this summer, that he doesn't manage to finagle his way onto the Lakers roster, that he does enter free agency in 2020 and looks to, as he said over the All-Star break, you know, possibly join any one of 29 other teams other than the Pelicans. I think we've also talked about, and maybe we've talked about this more on Locked On NBA on the national show, especially with Ben Golliver and his perspective on the show, and that, you know, Anthony Davis has suffered quite a bit here. His Q rating is taking a significant drop there. He's struggling right now in New Orleans because I think the situation has gone away from him, where his agent did something that he thought could work out in order to get his client to Los Angeles. Didn't work out that way, and now he's stuck in this quagmire where he's not going to get the kind of playing time we expect him to, and they're kind of sitting him down for no reason, but rather to preserve his health. They're not really concentrating on winning, and so he kind of needs to rebuild that trust. And one of the things that stood out to me in talking with you and Ben both was that the appeal to Los Angeles, aside from playing with with LeBron James, is that he can build up his marketing impact. Like, he can be parts of, he can join LeBron and then Space Jam 2. He can, you know, be in film and commercials and expand his brand a little bit and make much more money off the court. and possibly find a way to succeed on it as well. But I think the success on the court is probably a little less important to him at this point. And I wonder if maybe in Miami he'll get the opportunity to rebuild his image a little bit. You know, he can carry the team. He can be the star there. I think this roster, depending on what you have to give up in order to acquire a player like Davis, it probably gives him a better chance.
But that's the thing, like,
winning, especially because it's
if he's a free, he's going to be a free agent in 2020. He is going to be a free agent. His contract is up. There's no extension on the table. It's just whether or not he re-signs with whoever he gets traded to. But he's going to have options. And so the Heat might not have to give up anybody because they're going to have the cap, the one max cap slot no matter what, right? They're going to have it unless they completely change this roster and take on a bunch of long-term money, which is not going to be the case because Pat Riley just said that's not what he's going to do. And so, look, maybe Anthony Davis gets traded to the Lakers and they're able to recruit him while he's there and him and LeBron will never go away. But based on what you just talked about, maybe that doesn't happen. You know, maybe the Lakers and the Pelicans, that relationship might be so torched at this point that the Pelicans could just trade him somewhere else and be like, you know what, if you want to go to the Lakers, sign in 2020. But what if by then LeBron continues to break down? What if by then Anthony Davis is like, I want to win. I don't know if I want to necessarily go to the Lakers and do it with basically, deteriorating LeBron James and nothing else. We don't know what's going on with the Boston Celtics. Kyrie Irving could leave, and all of a sudden they're probably not going to want – Anthony Davis might not want to go there, and they probably wouldn't want to, you know, trade their one other star piece in Jason Tatum to get Anthony Davis for fear that he would leave. So now all this stuff starts happening. And then there's this other possibility. Everybody thinks Kevin Durant is going to the New York Knicks, and you can lump me into that group too. I ultimately think that's what's going to happen. But what if it –
Well, you said the Clippers before. Now you're changing course?
What if it doesn't, though? What if he just decides to say, you know what, I'm going to win another like, let's say the Warriors win another title again this year, and he's like, let me just roll this thing back one more year. I'm not super stoked about what's going to happen with the Knicks. I think I can wait on the Clippers if that's an option. Let's roll I could be a free agent in 2020. Let me roll this thing back one more time with the Warriors. If he does it and then instead enters the free agency of 2020, if Pat Riley is able to create two max cap slots, and the way that would work is that James Johnson and Kelly Olynyk both have player options for that season, Riley would have to unload at least one of those, but probably two of James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Deion Waiters, two of those kind of contracts. If he does that, he'll have two max cap slots to maybe attract Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant. I am not here predicting that this is going to happen, and the last thing that I want to do is get Heat fans' hopes up. I'm just trying to figure out why Pat Riley has circled the summer of 2020, and I do think that he's going to chase Anthony Davis because, again, you've talked about this 100 times, David. He's probably going to get a meeting with Anthony Davis. If he is a free agent, yes, and he will be, he's probably going to get a meeting. He has – I think Pat Riley is chasing Anthony Davis, and that's kind of where we're at right now.
It's a good theory. I mean, you're putting all your dominoes in the basket, and I think –
Throwback. I like the callback.
Yeah, and look, it does kind of project. But at the same time, look, this is Pat Riley. I mean, he says a lot. It's interesting. I can't remember who tweeted this out. It's interesting that we've seen the interview with Dan Le Batard just this past weekend, and now this through the Heat media. He hasn't addressed the media directly, and this is, you know, after the trade deadline, after everything that's happened, and he hasn't really been forthcoming.
He almost always addresses the media after the trade deadline. He did not this year.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things that I think we talked about after the Le Batard interview is that he's trying to stay relevant. He's just kind of leaking out just enough to remind everybody, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still committed to this team and to long-term success. And I think if you can acquire a player like Davis, that certainly assures that this team will be locked into success for some years to come. And if you can, of course, bring in an additional superstar like Durant, well, I mean, it's pretty much a done deal. I don't know. I don't want to be the Knicks here or the Lakers for the past, you know, however many years where they've been projecting that they were going to acquire every superstar. Miami fans are a little different. I mean, we've had success, especially in 2010, as far as acquiring free agents is concerned, but I just don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. And I think it can all change this summer. If if Dame Lillard, for whatever reason, requests a trade or somebody else of a star caliber player, I mean, who knows? It could be Harden. It could be anybody. If James goes into the playoffs and struggles again and Chris Paul continues to face injury and, look, he just wants to move on from that situation with the Rockets.
There's been some rumblings around the Rockets that people aren't super psyched with the new owner not willing to spend money a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I just said I don't want to get everybody's hopes up, and now we're talking about the Heat getting James Harden and Harden demanding a trade out of Houston. But look, I think that when Riley says we could bunch up these guys and go get the next Alonzo Mourning, go get the next Shaquille O'Neal, it would be something like that, right? And you mentioned Damian Lillard. Yeah. That's a really good one. Bradley Beal, you know, I think that's another name out there. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who could just say, look, 2021, I'm not re-signing with you, so you might as well speed up the rebuilding process and trade me.
Although, according to Beal, it would take him dying in order to get off the Wizards roster. I mean, something to that effect, I think, is what he said recently, that he wants to be there for life. And
he says a lot of that stuff, but he also admires Dwayne Wade.
But Lillard also said, yeah, that's true. And Lillard says that he's not willing to sell out because there are things more important than championships. I don't know. Look, they're players, and they change their perspective pretty regularly. And so it's hard to predict the landscape over the next 4 months or what could happen in a year and a half from now. So.
Yeah.
A hell of a night, man. You should have been there. Sorry.
I should have been there. Yeah.
We couldn't provide this quality programming for our listeners.
That's right. At the end of the day, that's what's really worth it. It's all about the listeners. I do whatever it takes. I'll miss out on one of Dwayne Wade's most legendary shots. Maybe possibly the last legendary shot, but
nice.
We got the podcast out on time, and that's all that really matters. That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Yeah!